Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I'm going to be with you for about 55 minutes today. And I say this, and I mean it sincerely. I am honored and privileged to have with me someone I have the utmost respect for. His name is Superintendent. That's his first name. His middle name is Joseph, and his last name is Curtis. When he leaves, I will refer to him as Mr. Curtis as a sign of respect. But good morning, Superintendent Curtis.
Good morning, Bill. It's great to be here. I actually was able to open up the window today, so hopefully better weather is coming. I was kind of frightened the past couple of mornings when we saw snow in the early morning. So I got a couple of emails saying, will you be able to delay school? And of course, it wasn't enough to do so. But hopefully warmer weather is ahead.
Well, my beautiful wife and I had a drive yesterday through the hills and dales of Route 9 to the VA hospital in Northampton. And I must say this to the state, all the towns, the cities, you did a great job. Considering, I will tell you, the ice on the trees up in the hill country, it was amazing.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I'd like to talk about this morning is a couple of things. One is the strategic coherence plan that you did with Jonathan Costa.
Yes, yes. He's amazing. Fantastic.
He's a visionary. He's where a lot of us should be as far as understanding AI. I mean, I think back and I reminisce, and, you know, when you get to be 78, you can reminisce too. If you remember to reminisce, that's the other thing. I can remember working in the shop when they got the first computer-assisted horizontal boring mill.
Wow.
Everybody was so excited. And I was a young kid just back from Vietnam. And I thought to myself, what are you excited about? That's your replacement, you know?
And, yes, I know.
And I think, Joe, if our superintendent, I think you and the entire staff and the school committee, along with Mr. Costa, who is a visionary, when I read and I watched him, in fact, I've watched it like three times. I have to absorb it because, you know, I'm not. But thank you. Thank the school committee. Thank all the people who are part of this. This is a magnificent document.
Yes, we formed a large group of staff members. We had family members as part of the strategic coherence planning process. And, you know, when we first began to work with Jonathan, he really emphasized how particularly wireless cell service was improving so dramatically and would allow for instant communication. And he showed us several examples of how 5G will improve so many things within our society. And then that evolved to working with artificial intelligence and really emphasizing the point that we need to educate our students and provide an atmosphere for them where they become problem solvers, because so much of the work that humans do now, AI will replace, either has already or certainly will in the very near future, not 10 years down the road, but a year or two down the road, if not quicker.
Yes. And it will become more and more and more sophisticated. So
because it learns from itself with all the information we put in. So that is absolutely correct.
I didn't get a chance to actually speak with him, but we emailed back and forth. I'm trying to get him on the show because I think with you on talking about it and then bringing him on, people will get a true understanding of how important this is. This isn't some fluke thing. And I have to say this, but I better do it before we get too deep. The views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Mayor Marchetti in the mayor's office, Peter White in the city council, and the person who was foolish enough to put their shovels away. This is only April. We can get snow. But this is cutting edge, Joe. I mean, this is really visionary stuff, because if we're teaching kids for a job in 2 years from now, that job's gone, then what?
Well, you know, even something as simple, you know, when we go to the fast food drive-in, I mean, we typically talk to a person to place our order, but you can see now that's being replaced by apps, and it's being replaced by artificial intelligence at the actual drive-through itself. So soon you won't have people that'll be taking your orders personally. That'll be completely eliminated. That's such a simplistic example. I understand that, but and that's why we have to really ensure that our educational experience evolves within the classroom, because as kids are learning in the ways that they are right now, that just won't be relevant or applicable and just in the very near future. So, you know, I think we all can't imagine how our lives will evolve with AI, but we know it's going to happen very quickly.
And one of the things that I would say to the audience, and I'm not a teacher, an educator, or anything like that, but I would say to and parents, don't erase this from your brain cells. Well, we've always done it that way, because that's gone.
Yeah.
Get in your, if you have a newer car, get in your car. I just said the other day, my car started doing something. I don't know why it's doing it, but the car is smarter than I am. And I know a lot of you will agree with that, but that's okay. But going through, I love the portrait of a graduate.
Yeah, that was, you know, Jonathan was actually quite pleased that we had done so much of that work through the efforts of the Barr Foundation and the Pittsfield Public Schools, and really articulating what skills and competencies we want our high school graduates to have when they exit the Pittsfield Public Schools. So, as you know, through reading the plan, that was really that, along with our mission, vision, and core values, that guided the entire development of the plan. And so, you know, that made the work a little bit easier, because so much foundational work had already been accomplished.
Joe, so if I may, I would just like to read the content of the index of this report for the listener to show you the depth. But I have to preface this by just saying this. You know, since going back to Dr. Eberwein, there was Dr. Eberwein and there was Dr. McCandless, and now there's Mr. Curtis. If you've ever watched the school committee meetings, when they come up with a proposal or a recommendation, it's fact-driven, data-driven. Yes. It's not a knee-jerk. Well, some kid threw a snowball, so we're going to outlaw snowballs in the world. And I mean that as a compliment, Mr. Curtis. I really do. But going back to this, first there's phase one, committing to the principle of coherence, portrait of a graduate, definition, and this one is fascinating. Deep learning.
Yes.
Result analysis, focus setting, strategic planning. And the strategic planning piece, in my opinion, is very well done, because it's based on humanism.
Yes. And, you know, you had emphasized when you were just reading that the concept of deep learning. And that's so critically essential, you know, because when we went to school, typically, and it still exists in some classrooms today, it's a series of tasks, if you will, whether it be worksheets or writing assignments that aren't connected to a problem or a real world situation. And, you know, those types of, I'll use the term worksheets, those are just not relevant to a student's educational experience at this point, because down the road, artificial intelligence could just simply complete that.
Yeah.
If I printed out a worksheet, let's say a math worksheet, I could use my phone and snapshot that worksheet and it would give me all the answers right away. And so what we want our students to experience is certainly having the knowledge to complete the mechanics or the skills or the concepts of mathematics, but more importantly now, being able to apply those concepts to solve a real world problem. That's where humans will be needed, to be able to have that conversation with each other and have that problem solving session to move things forward.
And when you look at this, you know, focus setting, strategic planning, but like I said, and I repeat myself, I found the strategic planning based in humanism. I'm sorry. I've been through a lot of strategic planning sessions, and it's like, okay, now we're going to need 5 buildings, and we'll need help too, but the buildings are what's, and I can't say enough good about it. Deepening a commitment to the portrait of a graduate, aligning goals and setting systems, aligning assessment practices, and planning for an uncertain digital future. And boy, that's the frosting on the cake.
Yeah. And, you know, we cannot imagine what the digital future is, just even 3 or 4 or 5 years out. So, you know, that's why we have to perfect, if you will, and foster an environment that students are encouraged to collaborate and discuss and problem solve with each other, because that's something that artificial intelligence can't yet do easily, right? It's better at rote tasks, fact gathering, if you will. But really, if artificial intelligence does that exclusively, we as part of the human race need to be able to talk with each other, discuss things, problem solve. And so that's really where this coherence plan focuses most of its efforts, either in supporting teachers to create an environment to do right. that with students, or for students to do it themselves.
You would think, Mr. Curtis, you would think that this Jonathan Costa would be on such demand in the college levels to train new teachers.
Yeah.
Because if we're training, and I found this even in criminal justice, if the criminal justice professors are teaching what they taught in 1980, it's outdated.
Yeah. Well, and you'll find if people do in the audience, just do a simple search for artificial intelligence schools. There are schools that are starting that are solely powered by artificial intelligence. Now, I'm not suggesting that, but you'll see the things that are already being accomplished in education with artificial intelligence driving the educational experience. So, you know, that's it's an interesting concept, and I'm sure many people would disagree. But, you know, as you know, technology moves forward, whether we agree or not.
And exactly. And we to just illustrate that a little bit, let's talk about the book Anxious Generation.
Yes.
The takeover of the cell phone is in the computer is taken. And to me, I have to tell you this story. Yeah. You remember the old Taconic, the radio station was in a storage closet.
Yeah, very small.
Morning, I'd walk down that hallway and there'd be these two young ladies every morning. So it would be the last day of school and then it would be the last day of the old Taconic. But I said, can I just ask you, every day I passed you in here, can I just ask you a question? They said, oh, sure. Who are you texting? And she went, her.
No.
Not what, 5 feet apart across the hall? I mean, it was, but that more and more you see it. I used this story after reading that aggressive, anxious generation.
Yes.
the Polish princess and I were out to dinner at a local restaurant, and it was a family of five, mom and dad and three kids. No one talked.
Yeah, that's where I start to have difficulty. It's interesting. I was recently at a restaurant near my son's college, and there was an entire family sitting next to us. We were actually talking and engaging with each other, but there was an entire family next to us, and there was one child with his own iPad watching TV while they were out to a restaurant. Now, that's not ideal to me in any way, but you know, it was also a quick story. I recently went on a field trip with elementary students to the Boston Symphony Orchestra. And as you know, it's about a 2.5 hour drive. So we're riding a school bus down to the BSO. And, you know, in my time, when I was young, I would keep asking, how much longer is it until we're there? Yeah. How much more of a drive it is? And this student sitting next to me in the row next to me, she just took her phone and said, hey, Siri, how much longer until we arrive at the Boston Symphony Orchestra? And Siri told her, you know, 2 hours, 1 hour, et cetera. So, you know, it's becoming such a part of them. I don't think it's a healthy part of them, to be quite honest, to have that phone at an arm's length at all times. But, you know, it is part of our world, and it's not going to go away.
And I just heard again, this is for the parents and grandparents out there. And I just listened to a podcast, I guess that's what they call it, about how having a phone and a computer or tablet or anything that connects with the internet in a child's bedroom is causing the interruption of sleep because stay up on that and then they can't get up in the morning.
Yeah. Well, because you're always anxious, if you will, wondering if a text message or a push message is going to come in. And yeah, I would agree with that completely. When I was, when my boys, not until they were 18 years old, could they have a phone in their bedroom at night. They had to charge them in my room because, you know, yeah. I didn't want them engaged in texting all night long. So, you know, we had a charging center in my bedroom and they had to plug them in there. They weren't allowed to have them overnight.
And I don't think that's a problem. You know, I really don't. And I think it should be a kind of a rule in most houses. I have not even 3-year-old grandson, and he goes to a preschool, and the teachers there said no screen time.
So that's going to be our challenge in the future. Is, you know, we have that issue right now in our school system. Yeah. It's, you know, I think if you talk to Jonathan, he would tell you that cell phones shouldn't be banned; they should be embraced. And, you know, we should be educating students on how to use them appropriately and properly, not ban them. We have people in the community, staff in the community that feel very strongly in a complete ban. So, you know, how those two beliefs will merge in the future based on a progressive artificial intelligence campaign, if you will, and growth in all of our, not only education, but our personal life, that'll be yet to be determined.
I just want to read, this is from the plan itself for folks. And I know when you're watching TV or listening to radio, it's really good. But I really went through this thing with a highlighter on the computer highlighter. And I didn't, it didn't highlight, but it highlighted, but it didn't highlight in color.
In color, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty cheap. But this is really interesting. However, with the advent of digital artificial intelligence age and the interconnected nature of the global economy, the definition of what it means to be appropriately, operative word, prepared, operative word, for life beyond school has been transformed.
Yeah.
And yeah, boy, that's it.
Very much so, you know. And I remember when I was in the technology department, we were just at that time, and I remember, I think it was Governor Angus King in Maine. He was the governor at the time. He's a senator now. But he was introducing the concept of students having laptops in the classroom to really foster a learning environment that would prepare them for the digital world. And that was in 2001, I believe. But he knew that a good deal of his citizens, in order to make a living, would have to work beyond the borders of the state of Maine. And so, he started that, I'll call it a revolution, if you will, now almost 25 years ago, knowing that the educational experience could not be what it was if students would be successful once they graduated high school.
And it's still going on. I mean, the computers are getting, they're faster and they can do all these things, and we're just, going on in the world today, these artificial intelligence is going to have need all these energy demands.
Yes.
We don't have the ability yet. So a lot smarter people than me are working their tails off to come up with energy. And just yesterday, that they're opening up coal again as an alternative source of energy. So,
Well, they're
right.
needing energy farms, because as more artificial intelligence, as you can imagine, they use servers and, a great deal of them, not just the size of our computer, but more like the size of a warehouse. So that needs to be powered. So energy farms are cropping up all the United States to power artificial intelligence.
Well, and I applaud you for bringing it to you and your staff to the school committee. And this is really in the spring of 2023, the school committee endorsed a novel approach called strategic coherence planning. And folks, this is kind of Star Wars thinking, not just stuff. It's because, yes, these computers can do a lot, but we have to put them together. And at this point, I mean, not me, because the guys in the station will tell you I can touch three buttons and that's it. They don't like anything else. Shut the whole darn place down. But I think it's important, Mr. Curtis, strategic coherence planning, their process. They put this really this and I hope to get Jonathan Costa on the program and interview him. In fact, I told him on the telephone or email. He is the future. I mean, whether we like it or don't like it, I'm certainly the past because I can't even make my cell phone work half the time, and my car outthinks me, locks its own doors when I get out. So,
Well, we were fortunate enough to have, he actually spoke at the beginning of this school year to the entire staff. So we had an elementary presentation and a secondary presentation, and I received numerous pieces of feedback and how powerful and relevant his presentation was in opening up our thinking about artificial intelligence and all of its possibilities. But like anything, there needs to be a lot of discussion with colleagues, with educators themselves, in providing a deeper learning experience where artificial intelligence can be embraced instead of banned. A lot of educators and people, they're very nervous about artificial intelligence, and when you really start to utilize it and see all the ways it can be used in everyday life to spend less time on fact-finding and more time on problem-solving, it's truly an amazing tool when used responsibly.
Two examples I like to give from my youth, and you got to remember, I went to school with Aristotle. So, but it one was a business math teacher, and at PHS at the time would not let us use calculators,
Calculators, yeah.
right? And so the argument that back then you didn't argue, it was just you, if I fight him, I'm going to break it, you know.
Yeah.
And so The other piece was too, when what you're saying to me is so relevant. They can hold this up, the cell phone, and get an answer to about any question they have.
Yeah. And you have to use it responsibly because artificial intelligence and websites, et cetera, they're not always the responses that you search for or receive, they're not always factual, right? So we can't take everything at face value, but that's part of really getting encouraging students to collaborate with each other so they can really analyze what information they're receiving from the web or from AI and ensure it's accurate and then move forward on how to use it, right? So that's where that collaboration is so critical, and that analytical mind that we want students to have, that they, when they do receive information, they do an analysis to see if it is, to ensure it's accurate before they move forward and make decisions.
The other piece is this. You just kind of triggered a thought that goes back to North Junior High, now AKA Reed. And to me, it's really something. It's we had a history teacher, and we had to memorize the dates of the French and Indian War,
Yeah.
right? And one of the kids in the class said, "Can I ask?" I can't even remember his name. And Mr. So and so, why were the French fighting the Indians? That's not important. What's important is, well, that's what was important, really, not when they did it. That's ancillary. Why they did it was the, and kind of what you're saying.
And
Yeah,
that's what I went through
critical
as well.
thinking.
Right. I experienced the same thing in history, classes when I was going through high school, the memorization of dates and facts. And now, and none of us remember any of those dates we memorized and we were tested on. But being able to know how to obtain accurate factual information, but more importantly, what to do with it, right? Or like you were, your example is, well, why did they have that, right? And so we need to understand why they had it so the past doesn't become prologue. So yeah, that fact memorization, we did that with vocabulary words and all different types of things. I remember, having, probably hundreds of long division problems to work out on large sheets of yellow paper. Is that important at this point? Some might debate, yes. What happens if we lose electricity and power and we don't have calculators? But most of the thinking is evolving to saying, let somebody else do that work and let's spend the time with the results and how to solve a problem.
The planning process that you that was put together to me was and I'll read it to the audience. Commitment to principles of coherence planning, focus and systems, commitment to skills and disposition of successful graduates and the learning environment that will support them. Another wonderful thing. The supportive learning environment. I mean, I remember, and you probably it'll trigger your mind. I had this young lady. She came in when it was at the old Taconic, and she came in and she was in metal fab. And I'm used to, I was in the shop, right? And most of the guys in metal fab, their breakfast was Cheerios, rusty bolts, and cream,
Yeah.
and they're all like. Bruh. And she was such a petite young lady. And I said, whatever made you pick that? She said, well, I want to become a doctor and I can make a lot of money as a welder. And she graduated, she went on, and this is several years ago, to a special underwater welding certification. And I talked with somebody who knew her many years ago, a teacher who's since passed. Said she did get into medical school and she was paying for medical school with her welding degree from Taconic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you know, like in any of our trades, artificial intelligence is assisting, tradesmen with the how and the step by step. But as you well know, that step by step doesn't always solve the problem, right? So they have to have the skills to take it a step further if that step by step does not work. And so, again, we are also promoting that collaboration, that talking with each other, that problem solving, not just in the content classes, but in our trades classes as well. It's critical.
We're going to take a 1 minute break. I am here with Superintendent Joseph Curtis. He is the superintendent of Pittsfield School System. I have the utmost respect, admiration, and a lot of what we're going to experience in the future was part of his doings to make it.
Thank
No, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sondrini.com.
People tune in to hear the latest local and national news.
That's not us.
People tune in to hear the latest music.
That's definitely not us.
People tune in to hear political pundits expound on politics.
No, no, no. That's not us.
How about people tune in to hear entertaining stories, jokes, odd topics, and laughter?
Oh, yeah, that's us. That's Stuff.
Tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 to listen to the latest Stuff with Bev Prentice and Lynn Arsenault on 89.7 WTBR FM.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
We're back, and with me today, for people that are just joining us in the last half hour, is my friend and superintendent of schools, Superintendent Joseph Curtis, and we're talking about this wonderful, wonderful plan that they put together to bring us up to AI standards. And when I was watching this, Jonathan Costa, his name is, present this plan, I was mesmerized. I mean, I couldn't absorb, of course, you know what you're dealing with me. I couldn't absorb it quick enough as he was presenting it. So yeah. I've watched it three other times on PCTV, a little push for PCTV. And then it's a gigantic undertaking. But the way that under the direction of Mr. Curtis and others, the way they put it together, it's almost, Joe, would you say, a step by step?
Oh yeah, I mean, he facilitated the whole process. We knew that we wanted somebody from outside our organization to facilitate because, we had a large group. It was between 30 and 35 people, and we really wanted to ensure that the person that did facilitate didn't have any bias or opinions or prior knowledge about our school district, so we can ensure that the outcomes were truly data driven, which they were. And you can see in the entire plan, there was a large amount of data collection, and the actual groups within the committee, if you
That's
will,
right.
they did all that data collection. That's part of the report itself. And the data collection drove the actual strategic objectives.
I didn't mean to step on you.
And
what a great way to facilitate a team through a process. By that, he the people themselves did it. He didn't tell them. They came with the information. He encouraged that by having the little groups made up. I read all the groups.
Yeah.
But I just want to finish this. We started before the break, strategic coherence planning process. And it really is. And I read the first one is commitment to principles of a coherent planning process. That then there's this one, data scan, internal and external performance and alignment. If the letters were bigger, I could read them. Old eyes. Alignment foundation and supportive systems to the stated vision of the graduate and the definition of learning. Result analysis. Define in this, listeners and viewers, this is so important. Define the gap between desired and current state.
Yeah.
Identify patterns and priorities. Focus setting, ID 2 to 5 priority gap closing strategic actions. Aligning actions with strategic focus, innovation, configuration, mapping, systems, impact, plan, actions, outcomes, timelines, and responsibilities. That's before they've done anything. They're doing it.
Yeah. And, you know, that's where his process was so impressive, is it was very step by step. And as we were going through the each step in the process, we weren't quite sure where it would all lead to. And as we worked through the process and we came to the 4 strategic objectives that you see in the plan, we understood that those strategic objectives came specifically from the data we gathered and the process we followed. So there wasn't the ability, if you will, to influence outcomes, that they were strictly based on data. And, you know, the entire group was very pleased with the objectives that came out of the plan as a result.
And this is a powerful group. I'm not going to read all their names, but these were people at every level. And what I have to say, I repeat myself, but when you get to be my age, you can repeat yourself. I said it in the first half. And basically, it goes back to Dr. Jake Eberwein, Dr. Jake McCandless, and now Mr. Joseph Curtis. Everything is researched, and everything is – it's not knee-jerk.
Right.
And I highly suggest you watch this program on PCTV. You will be scratching your head. I guarantee if you watch it once, you'll watch it at least twice just to comprehend everything that was said.
Yeah.
I mean,
as you know, Mr. Costa, he works with the State Department of Education in Connecticut. He also runs his own organization. And I believe the last check-in I have with him, he was acting as an acting superintendent for a school district as well. I don't know how he does all of those things at once, but he really was an amazing facilitator. And we, as you saw, when he came to the school committee, we still stay in constant contact and he still supports us.
Yes. And, you know, and I think that is very important. And I also think too, Joe, what is it? Parento 2080 focus. Can you kind of highlight that a little bit for us?
That is, you know, really understanding what ultimately we need to focus on in planning for our the education of the future. And, you know, we certainly, when we look back, we spend so much time and quite honestly and transparently, we do at times in focusing on rote memory items that we've memorized, right? That and so as AI replaces that quick recall of facts and we evolve to more of a problem solving learning environment, we know that our kids, our students will be more equipped for the real world.
And the other piece I thought was from that, they go to systems 85/15, and systems is a concept of systems orientation on how to work being how the work being done serves the primary driver for the overall quality of the work. And again, the process is just an amazing process. And from that, a curriculum can be developed and training.
Yeah. And you,
go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Throughout the whole process, he really stressed heavily in every way how the things that we do must become systematic. So they become the new way of operating, the new way of doing business. So no matter who's in the organization, what teachers are in the organization, what superintendent the school system has, that these changes, deeper learning, for example, are systematic, right? And that's truly when an organization begins to move forward. And, you know, as you know, we've never had in the history of the school system a strategic plan.
Right.
They've been a series of one-year plans where essentially, despite our best efforts, everything restarts each school year. And that's part of the reason our school district has been slow to move forward. So we thought it was essential to establish this strategic plan and stick with it for 3 to 5 years at least.
Yeah, you can always tweak. I was with a boss, and what I learned from another boss was never go to a meeting without an agenda, and not an ambiguous agenda. And I find those all the time: old business, new business. It's kind of ambiguous, but that's the old world. But yeah. The other piece is when you're. Malcolm Knowles used to say this, and you see why they don't really like me in church anymore. But I used to teach at the National Academy, we had to get this adult learners because they're different than kids. And the one thing that I have kind of played with a little bit, not his exact words, Malcolm Knowles had a saying, and I've tweaked it, and it's basically this. Mind can only absorb what the behind can endure. And you know, when you get, you've been to those 2-hour lectures, 20 yeah. minutes in, you're like.
Yeah, I don't know if it lasts 20 minutes, people's attention, to be quite honest. You know, yeah. It's.
In today's day and age, you're right.
Yeah, I know. You know, and you'll even find AI tools that. For college students, when there are long, lengthy lectures, students now have AI tools on their phone that listen to the lecture and then create an outline of notes.
Yeah.
You know, so then it begs the question, should there be any more lectures, right? If all a person is going to do is have a phone listen and do an outline, should there be any more lectures?
Exactly.
Someone might say, no, there shouldn't be any more lectures. Why waste your time? So there's a lot of different thoughts. You know, we, as we know, in our society, we have a lot of traditional thinkers.
Yes.
Let's keep things the same. And we have others that say, don't keep anything the same, right? And so we'll have to navigate this together in our society to push our thinking forward, but do it in a way that doesn't bring too much distress to people.
I think, if I may, and I don't know all of your plans. I try to keep up with the school committee meetings. I think some of it, if we can phase it in. I found through my career, you can make change, but you have to phase it in.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first year of
this I was going to tell Trump that, but he forgot.
Yeah, no comment. So this year was the first year of implementation. And so when you look at this year's plan, you'll see goals to reach a stage of implementation in the strategic objectives.
Yes. So, yeah.
You know, we were really deliberate when we wrote this year's goals to make sure they were obtainable. And manageable, so we could ensure there was progression through this year. And then obviously the school and district leadership will engage in next year's authoring of goals that will continue to progress us forward, but keeping with the same strategic objectives. So there's a lot of work ahead for the next interim superintendent.
Yeah, and I filled out my paperwork, but I decided I'm too old. And basically, but you know, when you like you, I also want to take a few minutes to applaud you and the committee, the team. I have never been, and maybe because I'm a junior high guy, I think there's that one, and maybe it's just me, one to six, by the time you get to seventh grade, you're going through some real changes. And I'm just saying, I don't know what you guys are coming up with, but I know you put a lot of time into making it worthwhile. It's going to be, again, change. And, you know, some people, if you don't believe me, ask Peter Marchetti how people are handling the toters.
I told the mayor that I think the toters are just great. I don't have any problem with them. I see the comments online, but I would hope that trash cans don't cause that much distress for anyone. But I guess some people, they do.
This change comes hard to a lot of people. And this program that you've done, tweakable.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of the yearly kind of analysis of the strategic plan is, did we meet the goals that we set? So that analysis is typically during the summer. And then if the answer is yes, we author new goals that keep the strategic objectives moving forward. If the answer is no, then you make those adjustments to the goals you set and continue on. But part of that is a yearly process, typically done during the summer, to ask the original committee and the school and district leaders, are these strategic objectives still meaningful? And did the goals we established for the previous school year help us progress forward towards realizing those strategic objectives being lived every day in the Pittsfield Public Schools?
One of the things that I carry with me is, you know, I ran the Violent Youthful Offender Program. And one of the things that still haunts me is parent involvement. Now, I have to go back a minute. When I my first interview with Mr. Curtis, Superintendent Curtis, was when he took over the principalship of Morningside.
Yes.
And I'll never forget this. And it was the beginning, and I'll say this, he doesn't have to agree, but it'd be the beginning of a friendship. And when I asked him this question, what's your philosophy of life kind of thing? And what he said is stuck with me, because I don't remember where I parked the car. But this has stuck with me since we sat in that studio. First, he said, I get up in the morning and I set a goal for myself. Then I set a goal for my kids, his own children.
Yeah.
I set a goal for my students. And then, and the thing that really, because of my background, stuck with me, and I set a goal for their parents. Mm. Now, that's a thoughtful person, because the interviews that I did with the young people that I dealt with, their parents were a lot of their problem. And getting parents to buy into getting the kid to school. I was just reading in that aggressive, anxious generation, Mr. Curtis, nationwide is still a problem getting kids back to school.
Attendance. Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting conversation. And, you know, I've had people just in conversation with me, you know, ask me, how is this an option? Why is it an option? And, you know, I can't answer that question for a parent. But, yeah, it still continues. Absenteeism still continues to be an issue, particularly in urban school districts like we are. And, you know, that has, as you know, that has endless implications for life. That if we can't figure out how to kind of jump over that hurdle,
right,
and ensure that a student's in school every day, how will they develop the school, the skill of work ethic,
right,
and their own employment? And that's a question many people in society have to answer.
Yeah, and I get upset when people blame the schools for the kids not going. Now, as a parent, my job was to get my kid to the school, and not the school's job to reach out and snag them and pull them in.
Yeah.
And somewhere we've lost that. And you're right in the thick of it. I just was looking over an article about, even now, with the return after COVID, there's great deficiencies in levels of learning. You know, kids aren't at the level they should be.
Yeah, you know, with remote learning, which I think almost everyone agrees it was not as effective as we had hoped. And for kids, at-risk kids, that put them at a strong deficit in a much more magnified way than what would have happened with in-person learning. So, you know, those deficits will be felt for years.
Yeah.
But again, there has to be, and I've said this for years too, like, in order for any student to succeed, there has to be a strong partnership between home and school.
That's right.
You cannot, a school cannot on its own provide a high level of success for a child. There has to be a partnership. Now, parent partnerships look all different types of ways.
Sure.
Right? Some parent partnerships, their parents are in the school all the time. They're on the PTO. They come for conferences.
Yep.
Other parent partnerships are, you know, completely supportive of the child's education behind the scenes. So there's all different types of ways to assess or to, yep, foster parent partnerships. But without the two, a child will not be successful. It is not possible. In my opinion, my humble opinion, like you said, this show is not the opinion of those that we represent.
Right.
But that, and we worked, and I worked very hard, and so did my team when I was at Morningside. And you,
yes,
can do that as a school principal, to really foster strong relationships with families, so they could see that value. And that was very doable as a school principal. As a superintendent, it's very difficult to really have those individual relationships with families. I certainly do, and I have many of them, but not like when I was a principal.
Well, and again, too, it's the importance of education. You know, when my father was a firefighter, and my mother was an RN, and we would sit at the table for dinner, 5 o'clock, don't be late, be there at 5. And my father, and I've told this story 100 times, my father would say, "So what you do in school today?" If you said nothing, it was lighting off a Roman candle.
Yeah.
What do you mean nothing? What do you go to school for? The importance. And my mother would say, "You have to learn when you're in school. What are you going to do for a living?" Those kinds of, and I know they're passe and they're archaic and they're ancient and all that, but there must be new ones that young kids, to foster the desire to learn.
Yeah.
And if they, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, if that certainly sparks a desire for them to engage in their own learning and their own personal growth, like you said, whatever it takes. But, you know, I think that's when we talk about education and we talk about student performance, there has to be a partnership there, right?
Yeah.
And I knew that as being a parent, that without my support,
right,
my constant involvement in my child's education, they were not going to do well.
That's right.
Now, there are some exceptions to the rule, right? Where you know, despite not having much support at all, they are incredibly successful. But that is more the exception. It's not the rule.
That's it. And, you know, there's so much going on today and with kids and so many distractions and the parents, in my opinion, you have to take an active role. I know a lot of passive parents. I grew up in a neighborhood that had a lot of passive parents. You know, if you went to school, you went to school. If you don't, you don't. But I think in today's day and age, you really have to be involved, not overbearing and not demanding and all this, unless it's necessary. One last thing, preschool. What you guys have done wonderful things with preschool.
Well, you know, we've expanded pre-K 3 and pre-K 4 opportunities across our city,
yeah.
You know, but one of the things in doing that is being able to obtain highly qualified staff. And, you know, and that, you know, that continues to be a struggle. So,
yeah.
You know, we certainly have been having many discussions. The next special education director and interim superintendent will really have to do some deep dives in data and assessment, if you will, to really determine that although these programs are highly desired and needed by the community, can we continue them on because of the availability of qualified staffing? And that's going to be a question that the next group of leaders will have to answer as, you know, they continue that strategic planning, if you will. And I'm not sure of the answer. Right now, we have difficulty. Will that change? That's yet to be determined.
Well, folks, I just want to, for those people who don't know, Superintendent Curtis will be leaving us. I think we owe him a debt of gratitude for all that he's done when he was assistant superintendent through COVID.
Yes.
I tried to counsel him about taking this job, but he didn't listen. He's been a stalwart for education. He's as since I've known him, and that's been a long time since he was the principal at Morningside. The last thing I would say to you, Superintendent, is the very best of luck in whatever you choose to do when you leave. And kind of a little breaking news for all of you. I will be cutting back to Mondays and Tuesdays only. I'm not, in case you didn't notice, thanks for not noticing, I'm not getting any younger, and I have some health issues that have kind of progressed. So not to take away Mr. Curtis's thunder, but I wanted to let some people know, and here's why. He was 200%, him and Dr. McCandless and Kathy Yan and Mayor Tyre, of saving this radio station. Yes. 200%. And it wasn't always easy. Trust me when I tell you, it wasn't always easy. So if you're watching and listening to this, you can thank Mr. Curtis, Dr. McCandless, Kathy Yan, Mrs. Yan, and Mayor Tyre and several others, Peter Marchetti. It's here. It's been here. It's been an honor for me to be on this station this many years. It was never my intention to stay this long.
Yeah.
But Joe, best of everything, and thank you for coming on. I personally owe you a debt of gratitude. You've been terrific to this program.
Well, thank you, Bill, for everything you've done for our community as well. Your service never goes unnoticed. So thank you.
We'll catch up, and when sometime this summer, we'll have a coffee.
Yes, that'd be great.
Thank you, everyone. And remember, I say this. I know some of you don't like it. You text me. I read them. God bless. And I say that because I mean it. We're all in this together. So what you can do today to help lift somebody's burden, make them laugh, make them smile. Let them go ahead in the checkout line. Something just to lift their day. We're all in this together, and we really need each other. We really do. Take care. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.